Hello everyone, I'm Matt Berry. And this is the third episode of a series of conversations with Jean-Michel Jarre at his studio in Paris. Today, we'll be talking about playing live.
Okay, so obviously with any big chart success, there's going to be some pressure to play live, which you did in quite a spectacular way in Place de la Concorde. So how did that come about?
Actually, I was quite intrigued by the, and I was also questioning and wondering how I could perform this music with the instruments I had in my kitchen. And because you can understand that how exciting and cool it could be to play in a rock bands, in jazz, because you have instruments made for performances. And then actually in history of instruments, musical instruments have been made and designed for playing instruments and sharing music with people. And then we put these instruments in studio, put mics on them, and then they had a second life with recorded music. With electronic synthesizers, electronic music is the same, is exactly the reverse. These instruments have been created and had their first life in studios, in laboratories, and then how can you make them cool on stage?
Yeah.
That was a real question mark that I wanted to try to solve. And then I thought that it could be, of course, very interesting to try to think about opera as an art form, where these people, great composers, were suddenly involved in a totally different kind of art form, involving carpenters and painters and scenographs. I mean, all the visual kind of people. And then I said, maybe it could be interesting to do that with the technology of my time, by involving video artists or working with people in the graphic world. And also because I always, and these days I was really convinced with the idea that for me, rock and jazz were made for clubs and indoor areas where you plug almost your body into an electric plug in the wall and then getting the energy straight like this, where electronic music being used, and for me being linked with kind of soundscapes and landscapes, like oxygen also linked with the environment and all these kind of ideas. I said the place of electronic music, I think it would be more outdoor. And also for another reason is because in these days you had no place to play electronic music. You either had some kind of halls, theaters made for rock, jazz, or theater.
Yeah.
You would have also some the first arenas where you had not designed for music, but more made for where on Monday you had Toyota doing a meeting, and then on Tuesday you have a boxing game, and then on Wednesday you have a political party doing a kind of meeting, and then you play on Thursday in some very strange, within strange vibes in this kind of non-environment. And then I said, okay, it would be interesting to try to explore the way of going, hijacking a place and doing a concert like a one-off.
Mm.
And that's coming probably from my major influence when I was a kid of a circus, with a circus in front of my grandparents' home, where I was fascinated by these people going from one street, going from one side of the street, just doing their show and following by the other side of the street in the following morning.
Mm.
And then that is something that for me it was the ultimate form of performance, that. Where you have the no second chance for the performers and for the audience. You can't have a second chance the following Saturday or next week. So this all different reasons made me to try to get to experiment. And then I got this kind of offer to do a concert for Bastille Day, National Day in France, for the outdoor. And I said it could be interesting to try to do something, concert, Place de la Concorde. And the mayor of Paris, what was Chirac at that time, accepted that, said, oh yes, okay, let's do that. And then it was totally improvised and experimented. So I was in contact with people I really loved. they are not around for a long time now. Their company was called Hold Up, and they had this. This guy was totally crazy. He was actually had the. And we experimented a lot. I experimented a lot on this. That was another side of my activity. We used some big searchlights from the German army from the war.
Yeah.
Where we put away all the filters to get more power, and then we designed some slides, giant slides in very thick glass. Pyrex, this glass that you could resist to big heat.
High temperatures, yeah.
High temperatures. And then to project on buildings. It was the first time that we could project giant images on buildings. And we really did that. And this company, they had a kind of truck, like black truck, it's very Batman style. And with these big searchlights on the roof. And then actually hijacking the facades of the building. And it's actually how the Concorde, the Place de la Concorde concert went away with actually projecting on the Parliament and on the facade all around the Place de la Concorde and the Church of Madeleine, the Madeleine, l'Église de la Madeleine. And then we were doing crazy things like for that time. Now you could do that easily, but it was also shooting, filming with Polaroids, some of the audience, and reprocessing in 2 or 3 hours into these glass slides, and then projecting also the faces of these of the people of the audience on the facade. So you had lots of crazy ideas that really made this concert very, very different. And then for my big surprise, I mean, I remember that at sunset I was just on stage just for doing things, and I saw a kind of real black area on the Champs-Élysées, and I thought it was the shadow of the sun, and it was actually the crowd, and I couldn't believe it. And then I was actually absolutely terrified by this, because it was absolutely unexpected. But for me, it was just a kind of more or less underground experimentation.
Yeah.
And then 1 million people came along. And it took me really a long time to recover that. And I remember that after the show, I mean, somebody came to me, and he looked like Fidel Castro with a very long, long beard like this. I said, "Man, I never saw that in my life. It's absolutely crazy and all that." And I said, "Oh, thank you." And then after that, somebody told me, "You know who he was?" I said, "No." It was Mick Jagger. And Mick actually went there. I don't know why he has this kind of crazy beard. He was filming something.
It would have been for the Australian Cowboy.
That's right. And then after we talked about that later on, and it was quite crazy. It was quite an evening. That I remember that you had no toilets and was blocked, and then I had to open, you know, in the street the thing to go to the sewers.
Yeah.
And then I went with a fireman inside, just under the stage, just to have a pee. I mean, just down the stage, because I was blocked. I couldn't do anything anywhere. You had no toilets. I mean, this kind of crazy, crazy environment, because it was something also, something totally like oxygen in a sense, something which was absolutely not following the rules of performance and concerts and touring. It was something totally different. And then after that, I've been asked by cities or countries or states to stage this kind of project. And very few people realize that I never woke up one morning saying I would like to do the concert at the pyramids or something like this in a kind of megalomaniac way. It's not at all. I mean, every time it's something that happened, I've been asked to do such project. I mean, the China project is also, again, coming from England, is the reason why that I have a very personal link with your country.
Right.
Because actually, in China, the British embassy gave oxygen equinox and magnetic fields, I think, to Chinese radio. And Deng Xiaoping, just after Mao's time, for the first time decided to open the door a little bit. And then the first non-Chinese music for 25 years has been
yours. Yeah.
I mean, because of this. And I recently, last year, met in China a film director, and he said, "You know, you have no idea what it was," because, and I didn't know this story. He said, when we knew that a music coming from somewhere else was going to be played at 3 o'clock in the National Chinese radio. And we, from the morning, we were all waiting in front of our radio.
Wow.
To listen to something we had no idea what it could be. And when we heard this music, we really thought that this music was coming from out of space. Because it does not, after that, he realized that it was not only like kind of Western rock. It was on top of it, not only alien for our background and our knowledge, but it was also alien because the music was in also linked to this kind of electronic world and all that. And then the concert after lots of crazy stories and difficulties, and then I came along because nobody knew exactly who was in charge. People were so scared about organizing something of that scale in China. And then 2 years later, the head of state would change and they would go in jail for 10 years. So everybody was very cautious. And I never knew who actually really invited me officially. But then I did this crazy concert in Beijing and Shanghai in a kind of stadiums after having visited some other open place, but I think for security, or I don't know. Then it happened in these big stadiums. I mean, it was like stadium for Mao's propaganda.
Yeah,
and that was really playing on the moon for the audience and for me, because these people were cut off. They had no idea about who the Beatles were, who Charlie Chaplin was, or Disney characters. They had no idea they had no knowledge. I mean, the last musicians they knew when I did the first masterclass. I went there for a masterclass before, and it was very moving because you had this. Musicians with broken hands, broken fingers. They had their hands broken because they were playing Debussy or Ravel.
Right.
It was not the music allowed during Mao's time. I mean, you know, Mao did much worse than Hitler.
Yeah.
And that was very moving. But their knowledge about music, about Western music, was actually Debussy, Ravel's time. They had no idea about anything else.
Yeah. That's fascinating. And the way that you chose to present yourself as well, what I mean is, for Concord, you're on your own, sort of playing lead lines.
Yeah.
And then come China, you have musicians with you.
We are four, yes. We are like a band, like a rock band, more or less.
So you wanted to do that because you didn't want to be just on your own?
Yeah, and also because in a sense, I always... It was quite ambivalent or quite... contradiction in my mind. At the same time, I always said, you know, I wouldn't see why what you can have in rock music, having a rock musician, a rock performer, that couldn't exist on stage. It was actually a total anti-Daft Punk thing. I would say, I keep projecting a human presence through electronic music. But at the same time, I always considered that the global project was much more important than myself or the musicians on stage, because of also the fact that I think involving visual techniques was a very good solution also to help performing electronic music. So, but then for musical reasons, I thought it was better, rather than being on my own, having also musicians, having electronic drums. I was really fascinated when it was just the early Siemens drums.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that's so cool. We must have a kind of rock drummer, but playing this kind of silly plywood, shiny red and yellow things. And it was also the Siemens, the first Siemens were the color of the Chinese flag. So I said, it's so cool, we should have that. And then said, okay, that could be cool to have a kind of band situation playing electronic music.
Yeah. So for you, it's not about you or necessarily about your other instruments, you know, that are very close to you on stage. It's the bigger picture. It's electronic music.
Exactly. And the head of a mouse on my head to say, okay, don't look at me, you know, and I'm not into this. I respect that because it's fun and it's another concept, but I was not into this kind of concept. But having said that, I always considered that the show was more important than the big picture was more important than just myself or the musicians on stage.
Yeah, so it's the fact that you're in a place that wouldn't normally be associated with electronic music, and the fact that it has a very wide audience, the fact that it's outside and there's spectacle as well. You've got
you've thought about all the images that are going up. And
yeah, I truly think that without knowing it, of course, these performances have been really the first one, the first ones of what electronic performances would become.
Yeah.
Through festivals these days. When I see lots of festivals, it reminds me of what I was doing 25 years ago, 30 years ago. So the reason why then I moved later on to other things, I mean, to try to not to, it has, I did it. So, you know, as an artist, it's the same for an actor. Or for, I mean, you did something, you want to do something else. Yeah. Otherwise, it's no sense to repeating yourself forever.
Yeah.
So, but for a long time, I've been really on my own. I mean, then the other band or the other artists involving lots of visuals were Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I remember that Nick Mason said on French television one day, I mean, we are stopping and then we leave Jean-Michel on his own. And that was very nice of him to say that. But I think that I heard that somebody told me that he heard that. I mean, when I started being involved in performances like this, I mean, bands such as U2 or even the Stones, I mean, they were just using lights and not really a lot of visuals that later on. So I think these kind of performances contributed to open doors to what a modern show is all about, mixing visuals, videos and lights and all that.
So you yourself thought there's more to this than, or there can be more to this than just a person playing some instruments.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's a, it doesn't make sense. And also because the when you're outdoor, the scale is different.
Yeah.
And in my case also, I mean, the audience is making the whole, and the because it's by the fact that the crowd is going to invade one street or one place, and then that becomes the theater for one night.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the scale has to be different. Then I've been involved in this period of the Concorde where we were experimenting with actually what would become years later mapping and all this. I mean, all these companies now existing, I mean, lots of them started with me, I mean, experimenting these things. And I should have been more business oriented and being having shares of these companies, I mean, these days, because they're all friends of mine. But whatever, then I experimented a lot in terms of visual techniques. And because I did lots of paintings when I was, I even hesitated with between painting and graphic arts and music. And actually, it's strange because some artists in prog rock or electronic music have been also linked with the fine arts. If you take Pink Floyd, Brian Eno, lots of people, also people in Germany, I mean, people in Tangerine Dream of Kraftwerk, I mean, lots of people linked with progressive music have been linked with visual. So, in a sense, I've always did my design by myself. All the design in of course, working with teams and collaborators, but I've always been very close to the visual aspect of what I was doing, and more even these days.
Yeah. Okay, so now, we've got to shoot on a couple of years to my first ever concert, age 15, at Docklands.
Oh, really? Yes, you told me that.
And
wow.
But the other thing, the other thing about it was, and I still remember this as if it was yesterday, the news on the radio that it wasn't going to happen, and the disappointment that I thought I was going to go to it and it wasn't going to happen. Was that on the Saturday or something like that? I can't remember.
Oh, yes. One day I will certainly write a book on the Docklands adventure, because so many side stories I started to tell you about this last time we met. And the Docklands is actually, the event itself is quite crazy and quite spectacular, but all the side stories are really amazing. Everything is crazy in this Docklands project, and actually we are now celebrating the 30th anniversary of it, and this is in a part of London what was actually totally wild in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that we had a big caterpillar being stolen during one night. Somebody took it piece by piece in one night. So it was really a tough area.
Yeah.
And the whole idea behind that was to create, because I was really into environment, and it was an old statement of using areas in going to disappear, because that the Docklands where we shot Brazil or Full Metal Jacket, was going to disappear. All these warehouses linked to the Industrial Revolution and to what makes this part of London so relevant was going to disappear for this kind of wild real estate type of business. And then I wanted to do something about that. Dreyfus, my producer and the record company, I mean, was involved in those early concerts. And then he met somebody, I won't mention the name, but he met this guy, the promoter. He was involved in boxing business.
Right.
And I never felt this guy. I said, I have a very bad feeling with this guy. And they said, no, you saw he's going to be cool and we are going to have to do this. He has an idea and all that and to organize the concert. I said, okay, with the partner you work with, after a while you say, okay, if you feel it, let's go. But I was not sure and I was bloody right. And then 3 weeks before we went with a crew of 350 people over there. And then we discovered that the guy forgot to ask an entertainment license that you need when you are in an outdoor place. And there is a regulation in those days where the borough is quite small. Most of the time you go and you ask for paper. But then you ask in this borough and in small boroughs with obscure regulations, I don't exactly control or understand even, you had to ask 12 guys from the borough to vote for or against the project. And in the Newham borough, you had in those days 85 different language groups. So the 12 guys, almost none of them were able to speak English. So when they voted, they didn't vote against me or for the project we had, because they have absolutely no knowledge and no information about that. They just voted against the system, against the mayor, against the area. And then the whole project collapsed. And then I remember that we were in this very small city hall with all the media in front of the door. So I had really 25 seconds to think about what I was going to say. And then it just came like this, saying, you know, I'm really shocked by the fact that as a French, I love the traditional sense of welcome of England. Give me a venue and I will do the show anywhere. And at that time, just this statement, I got suddenly the Royal Navy proposing a boat. So many people proposing the backyard of the garden. And then some other cities very happy to be against London. And then we had proposals from Birmingham, from Manchester, from lots of different cities. And then we started to go with helicopters from one city to another, with meeting the mayor, meeting the head of the police, and then to say, okay, come to our town. And then to cut this very long story short, because just this topic we could take half a day. At the same moment, then Robert Maxwell contacted me, because then he knew that I was going to do the big concert for the bicentennial of the French Revolution. And in those days, he wanted to launch a tabloid in France.
Right, did he?
So suddenly he was very interested to my case.
Yeah.
I met him and he was like a total serial encounter. And then he said, okay, I'm going to back the project. And from now, you will have the front page of the Daily Mirror and all my group every day. And then suddenly it started to be like this, crazy. And on top of it, at the same time, Princess Diana was, I met her a few times before, and I discovered that she was a fan of my music and she really knew some of my albums quite well. And we became quite good friends. And she always told me, when you play London, I will come. And in the middle of this chaos, she sent me a note saying, I really apologize for what's happening. Of course, I can't do anything, but if it happens, I will be there. So when by the end of the day, this whole project changed, with lots of events that it took me too long, but I will write, I said, a book on this one day, because so many things, crazy things happened.
Yeah.
It then finally happened. We had also to organize a royal box in this middle of chaos to welcome Princess Diana. And then when we had the go-ahead, instead of a late summer gig, it became an early fall gig, which is in London means rain.
Yeah.
Means it's totally, and then suddenly it became like the Atlantic Ocean the same, and the canal where the stage was became like the Atlantic Ocean in winter, yeah, with waves that nobody saw before. And then the Navy came and said, they decided that the stage should be considered as a boat, so we should have safety jackets. Everybody should wear safety jackets. So I had some people from the London Symphonic Orchestra involved, so they had to wear safety jackets. And I remember the stage manager being interviewed by the BBC or by somebody, saying, okay, but in case of rain, what would you do? And the guy, in a very cool way, said, in case of rain, we'll have umbrellas from Harrods. And you know, this whole thing, I mean, I could go on and on and on with this project. And then after, the security said, okay, but the problem now is you have one road for the Docklands, and with all this advertising and everybody's talking about it, we'll have so many people outside that is going to create a chaos, and it's a real problem. And I said, as almost as a joke, but you know, maybe we could do a second day. And then the people being blocked the first day could come then to attend to the show the second day. So it's a very good idea. So you have to, and the police asked me, it's true. They said, okay, let's go to the media and television to announce that it's going to be a second concert, but don't go, don't come.
Right.
But it was, the whole thing was totally hilarious and absolutely ridiculous. And then you had the total chaos for 2 days. You went there, and then we had this rain, it was like a military camp with mud, yeah, everywhere. Yeah. And one day it was raining dogs and cats and kangaroos and crocodiles and everything. And, yeah, and the second day it was freezing cold with wind. And what I really admire with the British audience, I think it's probably the only the audience in the world. You can have, when they decide to share a project and whatever happens, I mean, you're there, you're here, and really, I'm going for it. And that was one of the most moving moments for me after all these things. I mean, having such a fantastic audience.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah,
really fantastic.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic gig, the first concert I ever saw.
Yeah, on top of it. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I loved it.
Yeah, it was really really crazy, and also using the warehouses and this kind of industrial environment was really.
But cool. I don't remember the rain. You know, it's like all those things. You don't remember that. I just remember, you know, the visuals. You know, and the good things. You don't, yeah, remember.
No, you don't. No, of course we remember that, because when you have to go on stage by boat, yeah, you know, it's something that you remember. You know.
Yeah.
And the rain, which was pouring rain, it was really amazing. That's like, but actually, it added a kind of Wagnerian touch to it.
No, that totally.
Night,
yeah.
The second night, maybe you were there.
That was
the
first night.
The first one, where it was raining then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've still got the tape from Radio 1, live.
Ah, great.
From that gig.
Ah, that's fantastic.
And then I suppose the next significant concert for you came back to Paris. Would that be the next significant?
Yeah,
would you say?
And in the middle of it, you had lots of political mess in Paris. Then where they changed everything, and what I was supposed to do in 1989, I did it in 1990. So that was also another side of the story, at the same moment of the Docklands project. And before I had another very special moment for me was the two concerts I've done, one in Houston, one in my hometown, Lyon.
Sure.
One linked with space and this tragedy of Challenger, and with one dear friend, Ron McNair, one of the astronauts, was supposed to play in Weightlessness of Space live.
There was a saxophone part, wasn't there?
Part, yeah. That's right. And then and that didn't happen because of the Challenger crash. So it became big thing in America, of course. It's the, and then the same year I did the I've been linked with the sky for another reason, with the visit of the Pope in, yeah, in my hometown, and then that was also another very, very special moment. And then after the Docklands, and then the Paris concert, which has been also something extraordinary, because we had 2.5 million people. It's still in the archives, the French archives, for the biggest audience in Paris.
Yeah.
And I still don't really understand why. I mean, I had so many people. It's probably because people had the in days where we are and it's more and more the case, in days where we are, we have everything in our computer, on our smartphone now, the fact of living, experiencing something live, shoulder against shoulder, that's, you know, it's not going to happen anymore. It's probably the reason why you have this kind of audience. And nowadays, in a sense, festivals are more or less like this.
Yeah.
Suddenly you have lots of people sharing a weekend where we can have albums, you can have the visuals of the concert everywhere. But the fact of being live and knowing that it's not going to happen again is something very special.
So from then, Paris, you stage a concert in Egypt.
Yeah, it has been I've done lots of different concerts between Paris, La Défense, and then I did some concerts in the desert. I did some concerts I don't even remember now, and Moscow was the one. Yes, a few years later, and again something totally amazing because it was we had more than 3 million people, which is amazing when you think that the mayor announced the concert just 3 months before, saying this concert is going to be for 30,000 people.
Yeah,
and then it was 1% of of the total amount, which is still amazing. And what makes it two other elements quickly, what makes this concert very special, is another link with space, because we had a link, live link with Mir Station and the Cosmonauts.
That's right.
The Cosmonauts played Equinox because they had the Equinox tape there, and then by moving in weightlessness of the shuttle, so it was quite fun. And the other thing is actually it was the night of Princess Diana's funerals, and of course I was thinking about her, and then I you know, Saturday night in Moscow, it's particularly noisy.
Right.
Lots of vodkas being involved all around. And then I decided to just dedicate one song that I knew that she loved. It was Souvenir of China, that she liked very much this piece of music. And I dedicated that to Diana, and suddenly the whole crowd just stopped making noise. And they just put lights on. And you know, partly in those days, Moscow was quite far away from London.
Yeah.
And from all Princess Diana's world. And it was so moving that actually this girl, this woman, I mean, was so, had such a strong image all over the world, that even in Russia, it's not communist anymore, but it was not that far away. It was just 8 years later.
Huh? Yeah.
So the Iron Curtain and the Soviet Union was still fresh there. And having that, I was so moved by that. I was almost going to cry, and we couldn't play against it. It took me 3 or 4 minutes because it was so unexpected and so strong. That it's one of my biggest recollections of this concert. And then the pyramids has been also something else, because being UN ambassador for UNESCO for a long time, and the head of UNESCO said, you know, after Luxor, you had a very bad terrorist act in Luxor in Egypt. He said, we should maybe think about doing something. What do you think? And then it would be good to meet the people in Egypt, the Minister of Culture and all that. And then I went to Egypt, and then they got this idea of doing a concert for the millennium.
Yeah.
And then it happened. And then that was also another saga and nightmare, technically. I think if you play, and she knows what I'm talking about because she was there. And you know, if you have done something in Egypt, you can do anything, even probably on the moon and on Mars. And just one example is actually, and that was, I have hundreds of anecdotes like this. We were asking for 9 power generators for the show. And then the following morning, one guy is coming with 3 power generators and 6 camels. And he said, what is this? I said, camels, very strong. And you know, it was all linked with backshish, because they were perfectly articulate enough to understand that camels would never work. But they were playing all these games just to get some more money every time. And I remember that President Mubarak in those days, I mean, I met him before, a few days before the concert. He said, you know, I'm really impressed about what you're doing, what you're going to do. But you know what? I'm even more impressed that you are succeeding to do it in my country. that says a lot.
It does. So from up until then, I suppose, so from 1979 up until Egypt, what would you say was your favorite concert that you did?
It's very, very strange. I mean, I would say that the concert I've done in my hometown, where we put the stage in where we used to go with my grandmother to the marketplace, it was the same place. This is something probably very, very, very special. And also I would say that the Docklands, because of all what happened and the environment, is something so crazy that I will also remember all my life. And also the British audience. I mean, after that, I did the Wembley Stadium, I did the Manchester City, I did lots of the O2, lots of, and each time I'm so impressed by the way that the British audience is a very unique mixture of dedication when they appreciate an artist, wanting to have fun, and also the knowledge of music. I mean, it's a country of, it's really, you are a country of music, not only music, but this is something special.
Mm.
And that's probably those two moments.
Okay. And then you came indoors in a way.
Actually, I'm still going on and I'm working on future also outdoor projects. So I always continued to do outdoor concert when I'm, I have interesting requests, and it's also the case for next year and for the coming years. But then it could be also interesting for me as an experience. I mean, doing indoor and doing tours, because it's a traditional way of performing, but for me it was a new experience. So even if I did some indoor concerts before, like it was in China, or because one stadium in China was in Shanghai was an indoor stadium. I did some other things like this, but then a proper tour. I decided to do a proper world tour, and then because it's another experience, but and also now. Nowadays, I mean, it's the conditions of touring indoor are totally different. So you can do things in indoor situation that you can't do. You know, you're outdoor, you can't control the environment, the darkness, the light, the smoke.
Yeah.
Much more in an indoor situation. So I was really interested to do that, and I must say that I really enjoyed it immensely. And until recently, where the last world tour. I mean, ending with Coachella was also very unique, because Coachella is also another planet. I mean, you have all the festival in the world, but Coachella is something else. And I think in the life of a performer, you have to do Coachella once. And I must say that they've been very nice to me. They even build the stage in function of our production. And so that is one of the highlights of the recent month.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So in terms of coming indoors, was the first concert the Oxygen Live in your living room? Was that when you first came in?
That's why when I started with this kind of minimalist tour, when I said, okay, it could be fun in days where you have lots of DJs just coming on stage with a USB stick or SD card to do electronic music like a classical piece, Oxygen like a classical piece, entirely live, without sync, without anything, and just the four of us, because we have eight tracks, we have two hands, it makes eight parts.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And then we went into this, and we had a lot of fun doing this, and we're starting with a very small theater and doing like a small theater tour. And then on the way, it became more and more, and then starting from small theater, we ended with a kind of arena tour with this, and even playing the Royal Albert Hall and some bigger hall. And
but for you, that must have been a very different experience, because you've, for the Oxygen Live thing, that's something where you've got to concentrate very hard from the beginning of that to the end, and not specifically consider the audience as much as you would have done before.
Yes and no, because you know it's like in a rock band. Then you always have the three other guys. I mean, you can count on when you are on your own. It's a different story. But yeah, you're right, and also but it was coming with all the thing of this kind of proximity, and I realized that sometimes it's more impressive to play for a small audience very close than to a huge audience, because after a while it's not becoming abstract, but it's becoming like an experience. It's not the same.
Yeah.
And but it's I really enjoyed it immensely. That
you did enjoy it.
A lot. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why that I said, okay, let's try to experiment bigger tours, and then I went back a few times with each time with a bigger production.
Yeah. So would that be something that you might consider doing again with, say, Equinox?
Yeah, I think that you know, these days the same thing, and we'll talk about this probably later, but I mean the same as I consider, for instance, the collaboration project with Electronica, collaborating with people as a side project I would like to develop.
Yeah,
I would like to continue developing this kind of for me, which is a kind of side projects, considering outdoor events, but continuing having outdoor events and concerts when I have the opportunity, and continuing to develop tours, but maybe also going back to also a very small theater act, maybe on my own, or maybe I've been really impressed by, I saw Ruchi Sakamoto a few months ago, and he was really on his own. We went with Louis he was on his own, and it was a mixture of experimentation and moving from one instrument to the other in a very poetic way and very simple visual environment, and it gave me some idea about doing something quite different from what he was doing. But it's interesting, more like theater, like your field.
Yeah, because I mean, as an artist, I suppose you've gone as big as it gets. So you could do that. You could do anything. I mean, like, you know, in terms of live performance, and if you wanted to sort of scale it down.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. What you're saying is make me think about one project we had with Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah,
I was quite close about him because I was a massive fan of 2001: Space Odyssey. It has been one of the major influences in my life. And when I was in London when 2010, the sequel released, and I've been absolutely amazed to see in the acknowledgements my name.
Yeah.
So I wrote a letter, and then we became, because thanking me for, because he was listening to my music by writing 2010. Then we became quite good friends, and I was visiting him at more or less at the end of his life in Sri Lanka, where he was. And we had this idea to do the Royal Albert Hall together, and where he was in a wheelchair, where I will push him on stage with a wheelchair, just the two of us.
Yeah.
And then the show will be basically a Q&A of Arthur C. Clarke asking him about the future. And for instance, what could be, and all this crazy answer that he had about the visions. And then each moment would be like the Charlie Chaplin pianist by playing and improvising during the show. And the BBC was very interested, and lots of people, and the Royal Albert Hall, they were okay. But unfortunately, Arthur couldn't travel because he had a polio, and then he was quite weak. So he stayed there, but we never did that. Instead, we did a concert in 2001 in Okinawa, in Japan, where he was the MC. That we filmed him in Sri Lanka, and he was saying crazy statements about 2001 in the front of these Japanese girls and kids on the beach of Okinawa. totally crazy. And that's something that I would have liked. I've always been also part of my major influences have been movies, but also theater. I mean, people like Robert Wilson and Pina Bausch and all this kind of theater for me is a constant source of inspiration for even stage design ideas and concepts.
Yeah, because I suppose, I mean, you could take it further in that you could start a concert off whichever size you want to end up as being something completely different.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I always thought of in terms of what you do because of the instruments that you use and the sound that you have, that you can start off the most minimal way and then just by the end of it, or go the other way around, you know.
Yeah,
it's a sort of reverse.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting. I'm trying to do this in the current show I just toured with. I mean, where you watch the first song, the first piece of music, or the three one. Most of the time, you go to a tour and you know what to expect.
Yeah.
And in that case, I tried really to make the whole stage design evolving, where you have surprises and things. But I totally agree with that. I love one of my favorite. However, is the David Byrne Talking Heads. I mean, when he starts just on his own, and
yeah,
then you have
that, yeah,
musicians coming, and then the show is growing like this. And actually, the new one is actually also fantastic in terms of, I mean, he's such a talented guy.
Yeah, because that's something that you could totally do.
Yeah, this
or
is
have
exactly
half of
the
your
kind
concert
of
somewhere else. Doesn't even have to be where you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
something.
That's exactly the kind of things I'm interested by at the moment. So we should discuss that.
Absolutely.
I will be happy.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back in the studio with Jean-Michel Jarre next week for another episode.